It's Power Hour LSU.
And what is a dark day in the world of sports is everything fixed. It makes you think with everything that's happening in the NBA. My name's Carter the Power, and we're going to have a very open, relaxed live stream tonight. It won't be a long one. I want to watch the LSU women's basketball team, but I do want to start off with one rare stat that shows LSU will win this game versus Texas A&M. And I remember a few years ago, this was actually one of the more popular game previews that we used to do. And we've switched up how we've done our videos. A few of you have noticed over the years, we don't do as many pre-recorded public videos as we used to. But the truth is, LSU has been the luckiest team when it comes to something called a back-to-back road game. So rarely do SEC schools play one game on the road 1 week and then go the following week on the road as well. It's very difficult to do. So basically, you as a college student, you pack all your bags up, you go play a difficult SEC game in front of a gazillion people. It is so hard to do it again 6 days later, where you're flying back in from 3 a.m. From the game on Sunday. You're having to do coursework, rehab, all that stuff. And then you're on another plane. And the thing about the SEC is not all these schools are within a reasonable flight. It's a 3 or 4 hour flight. And then you're at it again, oftentimes at a different time, and so on and so on. So for LSU, historically, their schedules have not featured as many true back-to-back road games as some of these other SEC schools. But where LSU has actually gotten lucky is they have played a lot, and I mean a lot of schools, on the back end of a back-to-back road game, and they've won quite a few of those games. So this was actually brought up by Josh Pate, not this specific thing, but I'll show you his tweet at first, and then I'll show you the thread that I released after this. SEC teams playing second consecutive road games this Saturday: Ole Miss, Texas, Texas A&M, Missouri, and Tennessee. What I find to be more fascinating, though, is that three of these schools won on the road last week. That, of course, was Texas, Texas A&M, and Missouri. And, of course, Texas A&M won this past weekend in a track meet versus Arkansas. So it was an exhausting physical game, an up-and-down affair, lots of plays, lots of explosives, having to run down Taylen Green everywhere. And now you have to go on the road again. So this is some of our research, and this dates back to the Mississippi State game in 2022 when a few months before I picked up on this trend, and I made one of the biggest bets of my life on LSU to beat Mississippi State outright, because Mississippi State the week before played Arizona on the West Coast. Then they had to fly all the way back to Mississippi, and as a lot of you saw, we didn't play that great versus Mississippi State. Harold Perkins did, though, and Jaden did enough for us to win that game. So I know it's a lot of text on the screen if you're listening via podcast. Since 2019, there have only been four schools to complete the true back-to-back road game scenario, winning both games. 2019 LSU, a lot of you remember that. You had to play Alabama, and then the following week you had to go to Ole Miss. We did not play well in that Ole Miss game defensively, as a lot of you remember. Then in 2022, Georgia, it had been 3 years since someone had gone back-to-back to win true SEC road games, not including 2020 COVID year, because, you know, there weren't really crowds and all of that. But in 2022, Georgia was able to pull it off. The second end of the back-to-back road game, though, they did not play well. They played Kentucky, and they only won that game 16-6. In fact, that was the Barry and Brown breakout game. Maybe this is a sign that Barry and Brown, you should go bet his overs. Then the following year, Georgia was able to do it again, and they were an SEC championship finalist. They probably would have won the whole thing had they got in. And then 2023, Alabama was able to pull it off. No one in 2024 could pull it off, and no one in 2025 has been able to pull it off either up to this point. So it is rare. It is so rare for a team to be able to pull off true back-to-back, week-after-week road game victories. It's hard. In the NFL, it's a little bit easier. Those are pro athletes. So now, you take a look. We don't have to go on the road at all in back-to-back weeks this season. South Carolina doesn't, Alabama doesn't, and Georgia does not. Now, that doesn't mean our schedule is easier, but we did catch this major break. Then in 2022, or in point number two that you see on your screen, there have been some elite national championship caliber teams derailed from the college football playoff. 2022 Alabama, we beat them on the front end of a back-to-back. And then in 2024 last year, we beat Ole Miss. We'll get back to that here in just a second. And then, of course, point number three, we've already mentioned this, 2022 Mississippi State, we caught them on the back end. 2024, we caught Ole Miss on the back end. And then in 2025, this year versus Texas A&M. And one thing that all three of these games have in common is that LSU had not been playing that great leading into that game. And then after winning that game, they played better. Not so much Ole Miss, though. We'll talk about that in a second. But still, LSU is a slight favorite over Texas A&M in 2025. So really, almost the exact type of scenario for the context of this stat. And then, of course, like we mentioned, 2019 LSU and 2022 Georgia. So even arguably the two best teams of the past decade in the SEC, I do think these are the two best teams of the past decade in the Southeastern Conference, excluding 2020 Bama, because that doesn't count. They were not good on the back end of a back-to-back. So rarely does a team play their best. So it's not as if we beat Texas A&M on Saturday that we are a better team. We probably aren't. We probably aren't. But a lot is in our favor for this game. Now, why do I bring up 2024 Ole Miss in particular? There is a lot in common with that game compared to this game. The first is, for the 2024 Ole Miss season, they were playing that game versus LSU. That was the seventh game that they had played in 7 weeks. So they had a really, really, really late bye week. LSU was coming off a bye. Now, is LSU coming off a bye in this scenario? No, but they are coming off a game versus Vanderbilt, where there weren't a whole lot of plays played in that game in a normal game. And that game was played at 11 in the morning. So they got back in at a reasonable hour. Now, LSU will still be without with weeks. There were some other players that were banged up last week. But that was pretty interesting that LSU got to play that game at 11 and they were able to come back at a good time. A&M played the game versus Arkansas. That game ended at around 6 or so. You would guess that they probably got back to College Station around 10, back in their beds by midnight. It's better than if that game was played at night. But A&M, and I'll put up the schedule matrix, and then we're going to get to all your comments here. Texas A&M, you can see this is the fifth SEC game that they have had to play in 5 weeks. Now, you take a look at all four of the SEC teams that A&M played prior to LSU, three of them are way under expectation, and the other is Mississippi State, who is ahead of expectations, but still not that great. So Texas A&M, even with these teams not being so great, this is the fifth SEC game in 5 weeks, where LSU, of course, is playing their third SEC game in 3 weeks. Once again, a big benefit, though, is the South Carolina game and the Vanderbilt game were not track meets. They really weren't games where there was a gazillion plays played in that game. So do you prefer to take the worst team? LSU, to me, is worse than Texas A&M in every facet of the game of football right now. But they're at home, whereas Texas A&M, this is probably their toughest road task of the season. I include Notre Dame in that. Of course, Notre Dame is a better team than LSU, way better team. But you're playing that game in the second week of the season, or excuse me, the third week of the year. And Notre Dame had a weird bye week scenario where they had only played one game, and A&M had two tune-up games. So I do think it is hard for me to get to Texas A&M losing this game because LSU is indeed playing so badly. But it's part of the reason why this point spread is so low. I think Vegas has accounted for all of what I said. So, yeah, I mean, I do think it seems like a bit of a sucker line, and that's a good thing in favor of LSU. So let's get to some of your comments. And there you go. We say, how to Jay Smack, how to Ant. King MJ. Yeah, on Thursdays we do. It's the only days we do. Sourdough Man. And then we say hi to Clayton. Good to see you. Yeah. Talked to old Blake for a good 30 minutes earlier today. Now, the next thing I want to bring up before we get into the actual, our betting plays for this week, we have been really good. I should be keeping objective track of this, but I don't want to just be the college football betting guy. All right. I am not Colin Wilson, if you will, or Stucky. I do want to talk about sports betting. I do think it's relevant in the LSU conversation because, well, it's been part of one of Brian Kelly's teams in Kayshawn Boutte, of course, a few years ago. Kayshawn says he has matured since then, but he still did the thing where we were put in a really bad light. And thankfully, we were able to move on past that, and it didn't look good. Part of what helped, though, was Kayshawn's image was already tarnished for quite a few things. But the truth is, that was probably the most damaging thing. Now, the reason I bring that up is because in college athletics, there was just a rule passed that they must allow college athletes to bet on professional sports. Okay, I don't know all the laws behind it, but there was a big thing that happened today where college athletes can bet on pro sports. I know there are some player parents that go back and watch our streams and film studies and all of it. You might hate my guts. I might have talked bad about your husband or your son or whoever coach player, but the only message I would give you is that me, who likes to bet and do daily fantasy and all of that, if I were hired by any one of the major schools to work in the building, I am steering clear of all of that. And I understand that seems wrong. It does. But there is so much bad that can come from it. All right, there really, really, really is so much bad that could come from betting on sports. If you have the urge to actually bet on your own team. Because now, if college athletes hear, hey, now you can bet. Well, not all college athletes follow the rules. They might see that and be like, oh, okay, well, I can bet on Florida. I can bet on Alabama. And then it creeps into your mind, hey, I could bet on the game that I'm playing in. I know I'm getting a lot of touches in this game. I'm going to bet my overs. I know, and this is what the NBA guys have done. I'm going to play. I know I'm not going to play. I know I'm not going to get a lot of touches. I'm going to go bet on my unders, or I'm going to fake an injury and leave, which is what Terry Rozier in the NBA did. I will stress, and I would do it if I ran a program once every month. And I wouldn't just do it as the head coach. I would actually bring someone else in just to freshen up the message. Be careful with this. And even if it's not a player situation, if you are watching this, be careful. Because the one thing that people get wrong, and I feel this can be very predatory on athletes as well, is that, look, I've had sports betting partners on this channel. We're still looking for a big one. I think sports gambling is a good thing if you do it moderately, but there are some predatory things. Is that I could see a young athlete say, look, and I promise we'll get back into actual football discussion here in a second. But this is what a lot of regular people don't quite understand. When it comes to being a winning sports bettor, very little has to do with you understanding the game of football. Very, very, very little. All right, it honestly has very little to do with any sport. It has a lot to do with numbers, math, the VIG. If you don't know what the VIG is, then you probably shouldn't be betting in volume anyway. But where I think people really get messed up, and I think athletes get into this trouble as well, is that they think that they spend 10 hours a day studying opponents, studying film, and that has anything to do with actually winning in sports betting. It's stupid. It has, and that's why this stuff can be so bad for you. It's that you think, whoever you are, you think you know more than the MIT grads out west, these algorithms. You don't. And all you have to do is change your perspective on this and say, look, this game was decided by a fake punt, or this game was decided by a totally blown call by the referees. Well, if that's the case, you could have picked the right side of the bet. You could have picked the team that dominated the game, but and still lose. Right? This happened a few weeks ago, Arkansas versus Memphis. Arkansas was destroying Memphis. They're en route to destroying Memphis. There was the worst holding call of all time. That allowed Memphis to get back into the game. So if you bet Arkansas, you were on the right side of it. You were probably going to win that bet. The DeMarcado fumble versus the Cardinals. That's a perfect example. He was a Cardinals running back, and he was playing versus the Titans. Dropped the football before he reached the goal line. If that doesn't happen, all the Arizona Cardinal bets win. So I say that because there's shit that happens during games that you cannot predict. You can't do it. You can't. All right? You have got to preach to the players. It is not worth betting on yourself. It's not worth betting on any team, any coach. It's not worth it. Even with the rules. And Steve Sarkisian actually said something earlier today, I believe, about I don't like it. He does not like it. And he would have more knowledge about college athletes than any of us. Okay. So there you go. Now, next thing. I want to talk about Marcel Reed. We've seen and heard a few comments this week about Marcel Reed and how he is a dark horse Heisman candidate. Marcel Reed is a very solid quarterback. You know, I had him going into the season with a moderate bench risk tag. They brought in Jacob Zeno, who's a year six quarterback, and he's their backup. And Marcel Reed, of course, has been fantastic. He's not even close to being benched. It would be an act of God for him to be benched. And Marcel Reed probably this year in the SEC outside of Alabama has the best supporting cast, and that's without Baton Rouge native Le'Veon Moss, who's probably their best overall offensive player. The numbers you have to know are Concepcion, number 7, number 1, Craver, who's their best receiver, and Bethel Roman, number 3. Their tight end, 87, is a good player. Their offensive line is really good. I think Chase Basantis is so good. We recruited him. He would be by far our best offensive lineman, him or Braylon Moore, if he were on our team. And then Reuben Owens is a really good running back. And Emmitt Smith's son is on Texas A&M. He wears number 22. And that offense at the running back room had a lot of retention. So none of the – all three of these running backs, including Moss, were on the team last year. They bought back into Elko and decided to come back, and it's paid off for all three of them. This is a really, really, really good offense, okay? But it's going to be raining. It's going to be a big thing. Can they hold up versus an LSU defense at all week? People like myself have been saying, hey, this unit might not be that great. Now, you look at the positives for the LSU defense. This is the best secondary that Texas A&M has played all season long. The Notre Dame secondary that they lit up earlier this year wasn't that great. And they were playing in, they lost a lot of guys, and they were playing in their second game of the season. And then since then, they've not really played all that great of secondaries. Now, Florida has some good players, Carmoni McClain being one of them, but you know, overall, this Texas A&M wide receiver room has not seen a corner or a safety like Halsey and Delaney. Also, A.J. Halsey, who has been fantastic all season, is playing the best football of his career. 38 tackles in the last three games and a PFF grade that floats in the 70s. And on top of that, he has been making big-time touchdown-saving tackles, forcing teams to convert in the red zone. So I do think LSU will have a modified game plan with Harold Perkins. If they decide to play him every single snap, I will be questioning every last bit of the operation at LSU, especially since I said after the Ole Miss game, that was one of the craziest decisions I can remember. So, you know, for me, I really, really, really like LSU defensively in this game versus Texas A&M. If they make some changes, even with Whit Weeks not being available, I like the spot for them. And with that said, that means A&M's going to put up 40 plus. You know, something else I think offensively for LSU is the A&M defense was really hurt by Taylen Green's legs. So does that open up the possibility of Michael Van Buren getting more playing time this year or in this game? Maybe so, especially if Garrett takes a big shot or if he's struggling midway through. I do think when you start hearing rumors, and I'm not the insider type, but you know, there's enough smoke with where things are heading right now that LSU is going to make some changes on Sunday if we do not get a result here offensively. You really, really, really need to not turn the football over versus A&M. And then the second thing is if I'm Texas A&M, I'm throwing all different types of blitzes at Garrett Nussmeier and this offensive line. We could not sort them out. If I'm not blitzing, I'm stunning my linemen a lot. But DJ Chester and Weston Davis spells disaster. However, we are at home. We did have kind of sort of a run game going. Arkansas gashed A&M on the ground. Then again, that's Bobby Petrino. And Arkansas's running backs are bigger, and they play better than us this year. Mike Washington and Braylon Moore, or Braylon Russell. So we really, really, really need to try to run the football and then get play action game going off of that. Then you go to me, where it gets really spicy for LSU. That's the tight end position. Arkansas's tight ends did a really good job of blocking on the perimeter versus Texas A&M. can we get a better blocking performance from our tight end position? This has been the worst blocking I have ever seen from an LSU tight end room. The good news is Tre'Davious Green has given you elite receiver play in exchange for bad blocking. Barrett Sharpe has given you nothing outside of a 65-yard, you know, catch and run versus Florida and a few fumbles. So can you get something from your tight end room when it comes to blocking? Well, this would be the game of all games for LSU to play Donovan Green more. And I know that that sounds bad considering Donovan Green in his lone appearance versus Vanderbilt had a massive penalty on the 1 yard line. Give Vanderbilt credit. They did a stem. Green was cold off the bench. We had to blow a timeout before that. It was really tough. Okay. Now, what does that mean? Where is LSU as far as Donovan Green and his progress? How about I don't care? This is going to be the one guy on this team that is truly motivated to play against his former team, where the A&M coaching staff, the new coaching staff of Mike Elko, told Donovan Green, hey, you're not good enough. So I would give Donovan Green a little bit more playing time, maybe over Bauer Sharp. Okay? Let's go to Brennan. Brian Kelly is locked in. He doesn't lose at night in Death Valley. Well, I'll address that right after this. PHL Nation, it's time to lock in and get serious really quickly with our friends at Fortified Gulf Coast and FortifiedGulf.com. This is my buddy, Ramey. He is one of many Fortified Gulf Coast inspection professionals that are doing something to help you not only save your home, but your memories.
The Fortified program got started about 13 years ago. We adopted it here in New Orleans about 2.5 years ago. It's a more advanced way of doing the roof. It adds an extra layer of protection, whereas even if a hurricane was to pull the shingles off this roof, water will still not get into the house.
So yes, your establishment is important, but what about the things you can't replace? That family scrapbook or that painting that's been handed down from Meemaw to Papaw and to you? It is important to protect that today with Fortified Roofing. And while this seems like a priceless asset, did you know it can actually save you on your homeowner's insurance up to 37% if you are in South Louisiana? Just call the number 504-444-7563. That's 504-444-7563, or visit fortifiedgulf.com. That's. Are you missing that sweet swing? If pain is holding your golf game back, you must check out the full simulator at the Lafayette location of Laborde Therapy Center. Yes, Chase and his team built this simulator to go along with a full set of programs catered to your needs. Yes, this entire team at Laborde Therapy worked hard to fix that back. Your elbow, shoulders, wrists, knees, toes, it doesn't matter. At their Lafayette location, 337-981-4053. Call today. But what if you don't golf? And what if you don't live in Lafayette? No problem. They fix anything therapy related. Book today, LaborDTherapy.com, with locations in Cairncrow, Youngsville, Morgan City, and Crowley. LaborDTherapy.com. LaborDTherapy.com. Let's go.
So I think A&M's going to go in there and win. And suddenly, as the clock ticks down in the fourth quarter, history doesn't matter, because it only matters as much as you let it matter. And I think they win. And here's the thing about Death Valley at night. Everything they say about it is accurate. The catch is, if LSU has this season on the brink, which they do right now, I was there last year when Bama was in town. Bama ended up beating them by like 5 touchdowns. Ooh. And Death Valley on a Saturday night when LSU is losing empties very quickly. And the ones who remain remain to yell at Brian Kelly and to voice their displeasure. And it becomes very toxic for the home team, and it becomes very uncomfortable. And you love it if you're the road team. So, yeah, if you let LSU play a competitive game or they play with the lead, that place will be a nightmare for you. If you can flip the switch in there, it won't take much. The gasoline's already there. You just, I don't know why you bit the match, but you just gotta strike the match and throw it. And if A&M strikes the match and throws it, that place will take care of the rest. You can.
Before I give my thoughts on this, my thoughts. Don't need any of those. I'm married. I'm just going to play this. Might have some bad language in there.
Devin White, I'm talking about fucking greedy. I'm talking about Delpit. I'm talking about LSU. I'm talking about knocking people off the fucking ball, man. I'm talking about Charles fucking Scott.
There you go.
Do y'all remember fucking Charles Scott?
Yeah.
Do you remember Charles Scott?
Yeah.
The, you know what the fuck I'm talking about? I'm talking about LSU. We're not LSU. Why aren't we LSU? That's the question. Scone, Blake, Jock, one of y'all that's in that room. Ask Brian Kelly why we're not LSU. Wow. That's the question. Fuck all the other shit. Because if you ask him why we ain't winning the games, he's going to go, well, we expect to win. And we have a great opportunity. Excited to play Texas A&M.
You're spoiled at one point.
We're spoiled. Excited to play Texas A&M. We're always excited. We're excited for the challenge. Why aren't we LSU right now?
All right. I don't like the cursing on non-game days. But it's a good question. Why aren't we effing LSU right now? Where we have freaking the voice of college football, Josh Tate, saying, hey, Tiger Stadium ain't all that. All you got to do is go out there and get some ass kicking going, and the fans will leave. And then you got friend of the channel, Mr. Van Lathan, the biggest donor in the history of PHL. He's a big reason why I get to do what I get to do on his show, saying, why aren't we effing LSU right now? And once again, if you want to hear me do F-bombs, come for the Saturday postgame. Now, I want to also include, there will be no pregame or halftime show for this weekend's game. There will be a postgame show. It'll be a later postgame show. All right, we'll be doing pregame and halftimes for the rest of the season, for the final four games. We'll not do pregame and halftime show. Kind of needed a break from it. I get so tired. Because, you know, you do it what turns to be a one-hour pregame and then a one-and-a-half-hour halftime and then a two-hour postgame. It gets tough. But why aren't we LSU? The weird thing about that, and this has been relayed to me quite a bit, and I don't take back anything I said preseason regarding this, is that the team is bought in. The team is together. But are there some rotten apples in that room? I don't know. I do think part of the problem here, when you look at the better players that are on LSU's team right now, they're transfers. And there's only so many Band-Aids you can put on a gaping wound. Has any of you ever seen the Saw movies? Have you seen it? I remember a scene, I think it was in a Saw movie, where someone's knee was chopped off, and the Saw guy, or whatever the person's name was, grabbed a handful of salt and packed it into the wound. Just a big old chunk of salt and just slammed it right into the wound. That's what it feels like to be an LSU fan right now. And Mansoor Delane, he's great, but it seems like he is a mere Band-Aid for a wound that big. Same thing with AJ Halsey. They're probably both going to be first team All-SEC. and your defense still can't get lined up properly. And it's not their fault. You're playing with extra hats defensively when you have two guys playing that well. So to Sourdough Man's point, does Ole Miss have a lot of transfers? Oh, yeah, they do. They really do, and they're mostly transfers as well. So my point is, at LSU, we've always had a huge advantage of not needing to rely on transfers. And we have little to zero in-house development actually happening, which I think is overrated because of the transfer portal, but you would like to have some. And to a lot of those points that Van made, a lot of those guys were Louisiana guys that he was rattling off that were high school guys when they came into the program. And it meant everything to them. It meant everything. So it is something. It is something to discuss. But to me, and when you do this regularly, you do have a lot of people that don't keep up with the Everyday Show texting you, hey, what the heck's wrong with LSU? Why is this happening? Well, the truth is, Brian Kelly has always not been that great here. It's just the truth. When you really pay attention to the results, this isn't revisionist history on my part. I have said that it's mostly been like for every good, there's a bad, and for every other good, there's a worse. Yes, it's good that the offensive line and tight end recruiting in particular has gotten better. But now it's also gotten worse. Yes, it's true that it's fine that we made it to the 2022 SEC Championship game. Cool. We wouldn't have got there if the division rules were different. That was more of a technicality, if anything. Then you can get into 2023 and the 2024 teams and so on and so on. And then you can get into the actual results. How many wins at LSU under Brian Kelly can you point to where LSU was the dominant team from start to finish? Now, the truth is, there's not many SEC games where you dominate from start to finish. Arguably, the SEC's best team, Georgia, they have been less dominant in most of their SEC wins than actually dominant over a four-quarter period. But overall, there's just not many games you can point to where you say, wow, LSU really played elite football for all four quarters in all three facets of the game. The game I attended on the road last year, Arkansas was one of them, where LSU was the dominant team from start to finish in every facet of the game of football. So there's just not as many of those. And then, you know, we mentioned earlier the back-to-back road game thing. Just go back to 2022 Mississippi State. You can point to that game. We were very lucky to win. If Slade Roy doesn't make that play, the deep snapper, former guest, friend of the channel, what are we that season? We're very lucky to win that game versus Mississippi State. We're very lucky to win the game on the road versus Auburn. By any metric, post-game win expectancy, yard per play, in that game in particular, there are so many games that we have played, some of which we have been lucky to win, where we were not the better team, and the other team was the better coach team. It's just the truth. It's just the truth. Joseph brings up an interesting point. Jay Johnson could be next to the major leagues if we don't get our money right. I don't think that that's going to happen for a few reasons. Well, actually, I take that back. The only way that Jay Johnson would get so much money as a major league coach where he would have to say no is if Tony Vitello is great. Because if Tony Vitello is great with the Giants, then professional sports and all sports are copycat leagues. And Jay Johnson would obviously be the first coach that the MLB would call. But I think Jay Johnson actually likes recruiting. I think Jay Johnson understands if he leaves this job, yeah, he can always come back to college and have a lot of success at another program. But is he ever going to get a job like LSU's again? No, it's not going to happen. But yeah, you know, I will also say this as far as Jay Johnson is concerned. A big reason why Tony Vitello left, per my Tennessee sources, is he was displeased with the revenue share percentages. And that wasn't the only thing. I mean, obviously, you get this transformational chance. It rarely happens that a college coach gets offered an MLB job. But Jay Johnson is a tireless recruiter, and he is tireless when it comes to the money given to LSU baseball. In other words, he actually really does care turning this thing into Alabama football or UCLA basketball, but the wooden teams back then. So that would be the only thing I would point to as far as Jay Johnson is concerned. Now, I say all this about Brian Kelly. On Patreon, patreon.com/LSU football. The link is down below. You can for yourself see our statistical deep dive on Brian Kelly. And we're talking some deep analytical numbers that I'm not smart enough to get into, but this was a study done by a New York trader, if you will, and he's from the SEC world, and I've gotten to know him, and he ran some numbers for us as far as what the advanced analytics say about Brian Kelly this year at LSU, what LSU has been in past years, and what Notre Dame was in past years before Brian Kelly. And basically, the Cliff Notes, and I highly recommend you go watch it, join our Patreon. It's also on our YouTube membership as well. So Sourdough Man, I know you're a YouTube member, and you're a member of the Discord as well, so you can watch this in the YouTube membership. Cliff Notes, though, is that this is the lowest point of Brian Kelly's career right now. It really is this. More so than losing the Natty versus Alabama. I know everyone would point to that being the low point because you're actually there. But in retrospect, nobody thought Notre Dame was winning that game. Nobody. While in the middle of all of that, his best player was involved in one of the weirdest scandals of all time. And that actually, the revelations of that were kind of brewing then, but it really didn't kick into gear, if I remember correctly, until after. So clearly, BK with that team exceeded expectations. But I would say, based on us winning the season opening game, this is a low point. But there's a bunch of numbers to back this up to where this offense is worse, way worse in many facets than any of the LSU offenses under Les Miles. Okay? Yes, Blake, I highly recommend you go check it out. The advanced numbers bear it out. Now, it is important to point out that that 4-8 season at Notre Dame, they were very unlucky. I mean, they lost a lot of like one possession games. The schedule was easier, so the numbers would be a little bit better. But yeah, go check it out. And it looks like you're a student here. There you go. Blake, if you sign up for Patreon, I'll cover your first month. Just go to the Patreon link. You can see the study for yourself. And I'll Venmo you the $9.99 it costs to join the Patreon. So Sourdough Man, who's a member, just watch a video. Ask him. Ask Sourdough Man. I spent a lot of time on this last night. I normally don't do this type of stat deep dive during the season. Normally, Patreon videos are stat breakdowns, but not like a stat breakdown video. So what we normally do, and I forgot to actually pull this up on the our PHL analytics. We were way off last week. And this is someone in our Discord who actually comes up with these numbers. The Vegas line has Texas A&M as a 2.5-point favorite. Our analytic expert, who wants to remain anonymous, has Texas A&M as a 5.5-point favorite. So he sees value in Texas A&M winning this game. And he has this as a final score of 29-23. It's very interesting. A&M's offense is number one in all of college football in preventing havoc. Third down, though, there's another really good analytical study on this. Marcel Reed, early downs, is a really good quarterback. If you get him in third and long, it can get weird. Oh, okay. Let me look, CEO. I don't see a Cash App from you. It's all good, though. There you go. Sourdough Man gifted a membership. Look at you. Big thanks to you, Sourdough Man. He said he saw a good coach. Oh, this is CEO. To replace Kelly today, and you lost his name? You lost it? Oh, it's not like it's the most important thing. Oh, CEO got it. CEO got the membership. Let's go. Congratulations, bro. Memberships are booming right now. Let's go to Chad. He says BK is a clown. I don't know if clown's the right word. I think if BK did something. Now, has he made remarks that I would consider to be clownish? Yeah. I think, and I've said this all week, you cannot ever call a fan base spoiled unless you've actually won it all. If Ed Orgeron looked at us in the face and said, hey, you guys are spoiled, I'd be like, okay, yeah, sure, because we kind of are. You know, he gifted us the best team of all time. Every single one of us would take the disasters that were the 2020 and 2021 seasons. And we would probably take plenty of bad years afterwards just to have 2019 LSU. But you cannot ever call a fan base spoiled. And the weirdest thing about the spoiled line is that the fans are so important at LSU, because Tiger Stadium has been such a massive home field advantage. Massive. Even if, and quite a few LSU fans actually feel this way, and it's a dirty little secret, and it's hard for me to really put this into words, but a lot of people that do go to every single game feel the home field advantage of Tiger Stadium is a little overvalued. The in-game experience is a little overvalued. I disagree with that, but I don't go to every game like I used to. So there you go. We'll take a few more, and yeah, I'm going to tune into the LSU women's game tonight. Seven p.m. Central versus Mississippi College. Tipping off here in just a moment. I still can't believe the batting stuff, dude. I still can't believe it. I'm with you, Kenny, but, you know, we played that Josh Pate clip. I will be honest. And we've talked about this a few times. The A&M game was close. Very close. And the amount of South Carolina fans that told me, hey, Carter, it was dead. They didn't think it was that crazy. And a lot of LSU fans felt that way as well. And you want to know why that's the case? Because the offense sucks. It sucks. That's it. That's just football now. And where Brian Kelly is partially right about these spoiled comments is that take a look at our team from a few years ago with Jaden Daniels. You know, we weren't that much different in the loss column from that team to this year's team. In fact, we'll be exactly where we were in the loss column if we are to beat Texas A&M this weekend. But guess what? Even after that Alabama game, three losses deep. Ask anyone that was there for LSU Florida. My ass was there. And I've shared this plenty of times with this being, you know, my livelihood. You lose money when you do this, when you actually go to the games. It makes life a lot easier or a lot harder for you to do your post game from somewhere else and all of that. And Tiger Stadium was freaking lit. That was one of the loudest Tiger Stadium moments was Jaden in that game. And then A&M was packed on a Thanksgiving weekend. It was packed. The product is hard to watch. It's really, really, really hard to watch. Yeah, Brennan, you know, I'm not there. Like, I think it is a little bit. I think that is something where the second part of that, you really need to be there to comment on that. So I guess you were there. But yeah, the shootings on campus, what the heck? I know one of the instances was someone shooting themselves in the leg or whatever, but All right, CEO, welcome to the membership, man. And that will do it for me. Okay, once again, we will have a post-game show only. No pre-game, no halftime. We will do a late post-game show. So we'll see you there. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom! Tonight, we are doing pork chops. Let's go. Special shout out to Sourdough Man. Let's go.